So would you introduce yourself, please?
Hello, I'm Karen Elson.
Yeah, and this is radio. Sometimes we do video for these things, and unfortunately there wasn't enough room on the bus. So the bus pulls up. I have to just do this. I have to provide a visual for people. But it was funny because your tour manager just says, oh, you'll know when we're coming because the bus will pull up. And it's, number one, very impressive that they were able to park it that well. But this is quite the, it's an old school bus though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm sleeping in my little bunk and it's fantastic. Yeah,
it's a special moment. So all the way from Nashville, this bus is?
The bus came all the way from Nashville, but I flew in with everybody yesterday.
Oh, you cheated.
I cheated, but it was going to take me another 3 days away from my kids. So I had to go the quick route. Precious days.
I get that. So let's do what I like to call revisionist history. We're going to get to some of the things that are important, but people can read the bio, and that goes on for a while. But what are some of the things? Well, no, I mean, you know,
it does go on, but in a good way.
Can you tell me some things that maybe have gotten missed from your history? You know, because it's very easy to know that you've been modeling for X amount of years and blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think, you know, the nature of bios is that they almost gloss over, you know, your life in a wonderful way and always put the things that people will view as an achievement on there and sort of leave life experience on the wayside. So obviously on any bio, and particularly on mine, what's missing is pages and pages of life experience. And, you know, I've had quite a lot of that, to be honest, but it would take far too much of people's time to...
You didn't just snap your fingers, oh, I'm gonna do this.
No. When I was younger, that was always my dream, was to make a record and to sing. But where I grew up was sort of, it's really one of the most, for lack of a better word, one of the grimmest towns in England. And it was quite depressing growing up there. And even my sort of childhood dreams of becoming a singer, they didn't seem very promising, being, you know,
The North is the North.
There's a lot of great music in Manchester. That's the city near my town, which is Oldham. But The mindset is a million miles away. It's like going into the suburbs, but my suburbs were sort of dark, depressing council flats, crime, poverty, you know. You had dreams, but they stayed that way. So when I became a model, or when someone in Manchester shockingly came up to me and asked me if I wanted to be a model, you mean, they could have been a pimp for all I know. They could have been a million and one terrible things, you know. But luckily she was a legitimate model agent and she was real, and it's like a fairy godmother came over and sort of granted me my wish and transported me away into a completely different reality. So that's enabled me to become a singer, is ultimately by being a model and moving to New York City and fortunately being surrounded by very interesting, creative folks. So yeah, it's, and again, it's going to take me forever to explain my life. That's the problem. I'd bore you all to death, or maybe not, but I've had a really strange 15 years, really. So that's how I've come to this tour bus outside Café du Nord.
The big tour bus, the massive tour bus.
Is it really that massive?
Well, no, it's massive in terms of its structure, in terms of where it is. So let's break through the buzz early on, because this release, it's very easy for people to write, well, this is her first musical venture, but...
This band is a cabaret, a wonderful cabaret that actually my two friends who are San Francisco natives, Georgie Douglas and Sarah Sophie Flicker, who actually have raised hell at Café du Nord, apparently they've told me, but they started the Citizens Band 7 years ago at an art gallery in Brooklyn in New York, Deitch Gallery. And my friend Sarah had made a film and she wanted to do a variety show cabaret for the opening of her film. And she gathered all her friends together, her and Georgie gathered their friends together, and we came up with the Citizens Band. And it was so much fun and so alive and filled with so many creative people doing what they love to do. But there was this sense of openness. And I belonged in that. And those people in the Citizens Band really helped me just learn and flourish, and they didn't look at me as Karen Elson, the model. They looked at me as Karen, my friend, who loves to sing and who loves to perform. So let's give her a chance because we're all doing the same thing. And that's been 7 years, and we've done so many different shows in and around New York and around America. And it's really one of the most important collaborative bands I've ever been in. I mean, they have taught me so much. Rochelle Garnier, who's in the cabaret, she plays accordion and keys on my record, and she's brilliant, brilliant songwriter in her own right. And she, 3 years ago, started talking to me about making a record. She said, you know, you should really stop hiding. Go out there and, you know, you can write songs. Do it. So she was the person who sort of prodded me a little bit. And then everybody around me started doing the same thing. It was the strangest thing. It's just, I guess, the timing. People realized that this was real and not a fantasy I was living out.
This is all very, very new. This record is barely out, too, so that's pretty exciting.
It's ridiculously exciting. I mean, it's funny because it's been in my imagination for so long. It's been in my head for 10 years, and now it's finally out there. I thought I might be breathing a big sigh of relief, but if anything, now I keep thinking, okay, how do I... What else do I need to learn? How do I... grow from this, you know? It might sound a bit hokey, but I feel like this is the moment now, going on the road and performing live. There's going to be a multitude of life lessons and musical lessons I'm going to learn the next month or however long I'm going to go on tour for. This is the next step, and then I'm sure everyone's going to start bugging me to make another record, but it might take me another 10 years. That's the thing. But if it does, you never know. I don't know. You know, I want to just... I like taking my time. Melissa Auftemar is an old friend, and yeah, years ago she asked me to sing on, she was doing a project, she lived in the Chelsea Hotel, and then I actually took her apartment for a while. It was Janis Joplin's old apartment, apartment 411. It was really, yeah, it was a real,
wild.
It was a wild experience living there. But anyway, getting back onto Melissa, we sung a song together, my friend, a photographer, filmed it, and she introduced me to James Iha from the Smashing Pumpkins, and me and him and his friend Nicholas Frisk, who's also in A Camp with Nina Pearson from the Cardigans, recorded a few songs, a few that I helped write a few lyrics here and there, a few that they'd written together. And the sort of final product of that is ultimately the Serge Gainsbourg song, Je T'aime Moi Non Plus, and another song which Michael Stipe used in Uncut called Coming Down. And that was my earliest sort of experiment, I guess. I went into the studio and they taught me a lot. I mean, James is a really, really cool guy, as is Melissa, and they really took me under their wing and just helped teach me, you know, helped give me an insight to what it's like. And then sort of I went off by myself and holed up in the East Village for a few years and bought a crappy four track and sorry, can I say that on radio? Bought a bad four-track. I bought a bad, rough around the edges four-track that would constantly mangle my tapes, and started writing songs. I really wanted it to write songs organically. I didn't want to... I have a hang-up if I don't do things myself. I'm very stubborn. I like to do things myself. I don't... Almost annoyingly so. You know, if someone's trying to help me pick up a bag, I'm stubborn enough that I just want to take it myself. But that's the same approach I had to writing a song. I was never comfortable having someone else write a song for me. I wanted to learn how to do it. I knew I had it in me, but I just had to get in there and understand what goes into writing a song and express myself. And it took me a while to do that, you know, because I was just busy as a model, but also I was, you know, there's some people who are profound at a ridiculously young age. I don't think I was. It took me a while to sort of, maybe it's because I was a model, because everything was so focused on the way I look, that it took me a while for me to even understand how I felt, because no one really cared about that. Yeah. You know? So it took me quite a while to dig deep and find what's going on in there. And once I started to feel more comfortable with expressing myself, I started playing songs for people, and that's how Jack came to hear the songs I'd been writing, which were ultimately on the record. But it took a while.
I love the fact that you named the album after your high school nickname.
Yes, it was a high school, The Ghost Who Walks. I was the pale...
That's better than Stumpy or, you know.
But that's the nicest nickname they had. Trust me. I mean, being a pale redhead. You know how English people treat redheads? You know how horrible, you know?
I don't, but now you're going to tell me.
You know, there was something in England recently where this... there was a radio show on, and the DJ said, hey, you know, today's called Smack a Ginger Day. So everybody who saw a redhead had to slap them in the face.
Nice.
And all this entire day in England, apparently, all these poor little redhead kids were being assaulted because people don't like gingers in England. Or they do.
Very.
We're the source of ridicule because of our pale complexions and fiery hair.
One of the things that has been written about quite a bit, but you just led into it a whole different way, is that you do like to do things at your own pace. You do like to maintain control over things. And so when it came to working with your husband and your husband being your husband...
I think everyone thinks I'm lying when I say that. I think they... Because that question comes up quite a lot. And I think because it is for good reason, it seems like often when people who are in a relationship collaborate on something together, there's often what can happen is that things are revealed that maybe have never been revealed before. Whoops. But for me and Jack, it was the opposite experience. I think what we were both revealing was I was revealing my sort of true nature around him. And so I think we were both, it was great for us to work together in a sense that it's, if anything, it strengthened our sort of belief in each other, you know? I mean, he's a really incredible guy to work with in the studio. He's really inspiring and...
Very old school.
Yeah, very old school. I mean, he records directly onto tape. All his equipment is all analog. There's not a lot of corners he cuts. I mean, when we recorded a lot of these songs, they were live takes, a lot of them, with me and the band. And it was a real challenge at times, you know, because I had to sort of come out with my guns blazing, you know, the first few takes, and there wasn't really much room to sort of warm up into it. But that's good, because he also knew how to encourage me just to get up there and stand up and deliver my songs, if that makes sense. And I was actually really inspired by being in the studio, and it felt really exciting. And I think he was happy that I was finally doing what I loved. And it was, I mean, but luckily, Jack's studio is in our back garden, so it wasn't, I was going into a really safe place. I wasn't going into a foreign studio with people I'd never met before. I know the engineer, I know the people who are in my band, and Jack's my husband. So it was a completely loving, safe environment for me to go and sing my heart out and, you know, make amends, make peace with my record.
So one of the things that I read, which I thought was really kind of wonderful in a way, is that you said that making this record has given you more confidence in everything else, being a model, which given your pedigree as a model, you know, you would think that would feed your confidence in music. So it's an interesting role reversal.
I think that I've just... For so long, this has been haunting me, this record, or just, you know, singing and performing. It's just been plaguing me for years, and I always felt like I was letting myself down by not doing it, or I wasn't doing myself justice, you know? And finally to do what I love, it just makes, you know, I maybe used to be slightly resentful when I was a model and I wasn't singing, because I... For no good reason, because, you know, now I'm finally put a record out, I realize that modeling is, I mean, really, I'm fortunate to be in that. They've been really good to me, the fashion world. And, you know, it's a rare job that when you're successful at being a model, they will treat you as their own for a long, long time. And it's a very rare position to be in, and it made me realize that through actually going out and singing and finally doing what I love and getting it off my chest to go, oh, you know, I'm lucky to have this. I mean, it's a strange thing. I think it's just because I had something inside my heart that I wasn't living up to, or like I wasn't standing up to the challenge, it made everything else in my life, even the good things, seem sort of meaningless, if that makes sense. You know, a lot of people have things in their life where unfulfilled dreams, you know, and I was fortunate to fulfill, like, to live mine and to get these songs out of my head. But there's a lot of people in the world who can't do that, and I completely understand why people get angry, frustrated, and defeated. I mean, even in music, I'm getting an easy run, to be honest. I mean, naturally, from being Jack's wife, I, you know, look, I'm on a nice tour bus. Not a lot of brand new artists are out on a tour bus. They're in their vans slugging it away. So I feel very grateful that this is all happening, you know, because I understand from musicians I know how rough it is sometimes in the music business. I mean, it's just as vicious as fashion, you know. And it's what's even worse is that, you know, someone says something about the way you look, who cares, really? But if something says something bad about your soul, and which is for most people who make music, it's their soul, it's their everything, or it's heartbreaking. So I've met a lot of people in the music business who've been really messed around, for lack of a better word. And I just hope that, you know, I hope I can walk, keep making music. And again, talking about me being very stubborn and maybe slightly neurotic about music and about what I love to do, I think it's important, because I have to preserve, you know, the something that means everything to me, and not burn myself out and become slightly cynical towards something I love, because it's very easily done. You know, I get very strict on how much press I do and whatnot, because I don't want to burn out. I don't want to all of a sudden become a like a car salesman selling my product. I want to do what I love and make it, you know, make it genuine. I do that for a living. I have my picture taken. I would be a good car salesman, just as, you know. If you're lucky enough to be in the situation I'm in, I've got to preserve the magic of this experience if I can, and not let it be contorted by all the stuff that surrounds you. I have a lot of respect for people who really keep their music true to how they feel.
So I do a thing called a musical sandwich. Yes, and we've done a few hundred of these. So it is two of your songs as the bread, okay, and then songs by anybody else that you want to put in between.